Welcome to today's deep dive. So we are looking at why lighting a scented candle and taking a bubble bath might actually be kind of the absolute worst approach to fixing modern burnout.
Yeah, it really is.
Right, like we're unpacking this comprehensive six-part visual framework from our sources called the Thrive Balance. And the mission for our time together today is to really map out a systemic, highly measurable approach to sustainable human performance.
Because it's a completely different paradigm.
Exactly, because if you are trying to navigate the overwhelming complexity of modern life with just, a bath bomb, you are basically bringing a squirt gun to a systemic fire.
That is a really critical distinction to make right out of the gate, I think. The true value of the source material we're looking at today isn't that it provides just another superficial list of self-care tips. It completely redefines well-being as this biological and psychological ecosystem.
An ecosystem, yes.
Right. It meticulously connects the dots, showing you how your micro choices, like those seemingly insignificant decisions you make hour by hour, dictate your macro level life satisfaction and your cognitive bandwidth.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with that ecosystem concept, because I love that. The framework takes balance, which is usually this abstract floating idea, and anchors it into six concrete, actionable pathways. And I like to visualize these six pathways like an audio engineer's mixing board.
That's a good way to look at it.
Right. You don't just shove all six sliders up to the absolute maximum. That would distort the track completely. Instead, you're constantly adjusting them based on the demands of the specific song you're playing that day.
Exactly. And the source breaks down these six specific pathways.
Yeah, let's list those.
So we have stress resilience, which is your emotional strength, digital balance, creating those tech boundaries, mindful productivity, so honoring your energy, restorative movement to release tension, nutritional wellness for fueling and healing, and finally, sleep and recovery, which is prioritizing deep rest.
So instead of just listing them out like a table of contents, let's look at how they actually interact in a typical day. Let's say you've got a massive deadline, so you crank up the slider for mindful productivity. You're hyper-focused, you're pushing hard.
Right, which you have to do sometimes.
Right. But to sustain that, people almost always immediately drop the slider for sleep and recovery.
Which initiates a total cascading failure across the rest of the board. When you chronically suppress the sleep and recovery pathway, your brain's amygdala-like, its threat detection center becomes hyper-reactive. You literally lose the neurological hardware required for the next pathway, which is stress resilience. Yeah, and without stress resilience, your emotional regulation just plummets. You start reacting to a simple email as if a tiger just walked into the room.
A tiger in your inbox? I mean, we've all been there. And when you're in that state of constant perceived threat, you naturally look for a quick escape. So there goes the next pathway, digital balance.
Exactly.
Instead of maintaining boundaries with technology, you're just doom scrolling at midnight to numb the hyperreactivity.
Precisely. And because you are now exhausted and emotionally depleted, you completely abandon the restorative movement pathway.
Oh, totally. You just sink into the couch.
Right. You convince yourself you don't have the energy to move, when in reality, physical movement is exactly what would metabolize those stress hormones flooding your system.
It flushes it out.
Exactly. And finally, to artificially compensate for this massive energy deficit, your nutritional wellness pathway degrades into, relying entirely on refined sugars and excessive caffeine just to keep your eyes open.
So just by ignoring one slider sleep, you've completely compromised your emotional regulation, your focus, your physical adaptability. I mean, the sliders are physically wired together behind the board.
They absolutely are. Neglecting one pulls the others down.
But I know if you're listening to this, you're a critical thinker, you're hearing pathways like sleep, movement, and nutrition, and you might be thinking, sure, I know I'm supposed to eat my vegetables and go for a jog. Why should I trust this specific framework?
Which is a fair question.
Right? But the source material anchors these pathways in hard empirical evidence. The data from the Science of Balance section is just staggering, but only if we understand what's actually happening under the hood.
Yeah, it moves these concepts from just nice ideas to measurable biological realities. For example, the sources cite research from the Harvard Business Review showing that mindfulness practices improve focus and cognitive performance by up to 16%.
16% just for mindfulness.
Right. But we have to look at the mechanism there. It isn't magic. Mindfulness actively thickens the prefrontal cortex and decreases the gray matter in the amygdala.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you are physically changing the structure of your brain to be less reactive to distractions.
Which perfectly complements the data they have on movement. Stanford University found that regular movement boosts mood and productivity by up to 23%.
Which is huge.
It's massive. And again, they aren't just talking about a fleeting rush of endorphins. When you engage in restorative movement, you are actively increasing blood flow and flushing accumulated cortisol out of your bloodstream.
You're cleaning house.
Exactly. You are literally clearing the chemical panic out of your system so that your executive function can finally come back online.
And then there's the neurological impact of the sleep and recovery pathway.
Mm-hmm.
The Sleep Foundation notes a 20% increase in productivity from optimized sleep.
20%.
Yeah. And this is largely due to the glymphatic system in the brain, which it only fully activates during deep sleep stages.
Right.
It essentially power washes metabolic waste proteins out of your neural pathways.
Yeah.
If you skip that recovery, you are waking up with a brain full of literal cellular trash.
Cellular trash, that is such a visceral image.
Right. But it explains the brain fog and the inability to focus so perfectly.
It really does. And we see the same measurable impact with the other pathways, too. Like, research in frontiers in psychology shows that mindful breathing reduces stress by 30%.
30% is a massive reduction.
It is. And the Journal of Nutrition confirms the direct correlation between nutrient-dense foods and sustained neurotransmitter production. But okay, I have to push back here on behalf of anyone listening who is currently just buried under a mountain of urgent tasks.
Okay, go for it.
Wait, so if I just take a deep breath and go for a 20-minute walk, I am suddenly 30% less stressed and 23% more productive. Like, is it really that simple? Or are we just treating humans like malfunctioning vending machines?
What do you mean by vending machines?
You know, like, insert 3 deep breaths here, dispense a perfectly optimized employee there. It feels a bit reductionist.
Ah, I see what you're saying. And what's fascinating here is that the framework explicitly warns against that exact transactional mindset.
Okay, good.
Yeah, the core philosophy of the text is summarized in this quote. Small daily choices create powerful long-term results.
Okay, small daily choices.
Right. It isn't about treating yourself like a productivity robot where one deep breath instantly cures a decade of chronic stress. It's about structural adaptation.
Right, because one workout doesn't make you an Olympian.
Exactly. And a single mindful breath doesn't cure burnout. But habitual engagement with these pathways lowers your baseline allostatic load over time.
Okay, that makes sense.
We aren't trying to optimize you into a machine. We are acknowledging that you are a complex biological organism that requires specific inputs to maintain homeostasis. Balance isn't this luxury you earn after the work is finally done. It is the fundamental physiological prerequisite for doing the work in the first place.
The prerequisite. I really love that reframe. Like, if you don't pour a foundation, you don't get to build the house. But this brings up a massive contradiction for me. If the science is this robust, and we know with absolute biological certainty that prioritizing sleep, movement, and recovery makes us better at literally everything, why do we constantly crash?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right. Like, why is burnout basically the defining epidemic of the modern professional world?
Because the mechanics of crashing are incredibly subtle, and they feed on themselves through a process the framework calls the burnout cycle.
Is that a burnout cycle?
Yeah. It's an insidious loop that happens in 4 distinct escalating steps. And step one is simply pressure. It's just that feeling of too much, too fast.
Which is the baseline state for most of us, honestly. The inbox is overflowing, you have back-to-back meetings, family obligations are stacking up, the demands are just relentless.
And if that pressure is sustained without utilizing the 6 pathways we just talked about, you are pushed into step 2, overstimulation.
Okay.
This is where your mind and body become truly overloaded. The external demands vastly outpace your internal processing speed.
You're just taking in too much data.
Exactly. Your nervous system gets stuck in a sympathetic fight-or-flight state. You become hypervigilant, irritable, and genuinely incapable of resting, even when you have the chance.
Oh, man, that tired but wired feeling.
Yes, which inevitably drains your reserves, dropping you into step 3, exhaustion.
And this is usually where society thinks burnout stops, right? We picture burnout as just being really, really tired, like needing a long weekend on the couch.
Right, but exhaustion is only step 3. If you stay exhausted long enough, the brain initiates a protective shutdown mechanism, which is step 4, disconnection.
Disconnection.
Yeah. You become detached from yourself, isolated from others, and entirely cynical about your purpose. You experience anhedonia, which is the inability to feel pleasure or care about the things that used to drive you.
Wow.
It's not just a lack of energy at that point. It's almost a lack of humanity.
Wow. Disconnection. That's terrifying. But the text contrasts this cycle directly with the solution, which it calls the renewal pathway. And the renewal pathway also has four sequential steps. It starts with awareness, the ability to pause, step back, and just notice your current state without judgment.
Which is harder than it sounds.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Step two is intentional choice, choosing a specific action from those six pathways that supports you. Step three is balance the actual alignment of your mind, body, and energy. And step four is sustainable performance, showing up fully and consistently.
Exactly.
There is a line in the source material that really stopped me in my tracks. It says, you don't have to do more. You just need what restores you.
That's a great quote.
It is. It makes me think of a smartphone that's out of battery. When your phone is flashing at 1%, you don't try to solve the problem by frantically downloading more battery-saving apps, you know?
Right.
And just plug the physical device into the wall. But with ourselves, we try to download more apps, we buy another time management book while we're deeply exhausted, instead of just plugging into the pathways that restore our hardware.
That smartphone analogy perfectly illustrates why step four of the burnout cycle, disconnection, is so lethal.
How so?
Well, think about it. When your phone completely dies, the screen goes black. It can't even display the low battery warning anymore.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
When we hit disconnection, we lose the very faculty of awareness, which is the required first step of the renewal pathway. If you are entirely disconnected from your own internal state, you can't pause and notice that you are redlining.
You're just blind to it.
Exactly. You just keep frantically swiping at a dead screen, wondering why nothing is loading.
So the imperative here is that we have to interrupt the cycle before the screen goes completely black. We need to identify what triggers that initial pressure and overstimulation so we can catch it early.
Right.
The framework divides all of our daily inputs into two distinct categories, the noise and the choice. So let's look at the noise first. This is basically the architecture of overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
It includes constant notifications, information overload, chronic multitasking, comparison and pressure, unclear priorities, and just that general expectation of being perpetually on.
Which is everywhere now.
It really is. And the source explicitly notes that this noise doesn't just annoy you, it actively drains your cognitive energy, clouds your clarity, and accelerates that trajectory toward disconnection.
And directly opposing that, we have the choice. This represents intentional, deliberate living.
Okay.
It includes setting mindful boundaries with technology, practicing intentional single tasking, cultivating self-compassion, clarifying your true priorities, and actually allowing for moments of presence and stillness in your day.
Which feels so rare.
Right. But these choices do the exact opposite of the noise. They restore your energy reserves, sharpen your executive function, and reconnect you to your core values.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me. When you line up these two categories side by side, you see direct opposites. Mm-hmm. On the noise side, you have comparison and pressure. On the choice side, the corresponding antidote isn't working harder, it's self-compassion.
Yes.
And I think a lot of highly driven people hear a term like self-compassion and their eyes just roll. They view it as a soft, feel-good platitude that has no place in high performance.
Oh, definitely. It gets dismissed a lot.
Right. So how does self-compassion actually function as a practical, mechanical tool to combat the noise?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture of our neurobiology, we have to look at what's happening when we are immersed in the noise.
Okay.
Chronic multitasking and that constant barrage of digital notifications force your brain into a state of continuous partial attention.
Continuous partial attention.
Yeah. Your amygdala is constantly scanning for the next ping, creating this baseline state of neurological panic. When you add internal comparison and self-criticism to that, like beating yourself up for not doing enough, you are triggering a secondary cascade of cortisol and adrenaline.
So you're pouring gas on the fire.
Exactly. You are literally attacking yourself from the inside. Self-compassion acts as a biological circuit breaker in that feedback loop.
A circuit breaker.
Yes. It isn't about letting yourself off the hook or lowering your standards. It is a targeted neurological intervention. By speaking to yourself with understanding rather than harsh judgment, you downregulate the brain's default mode network and activate the parasympathetic nervous system.
Wow, so it actually physically calms the body down.
It shifts you out of that reactive fight or flight panic. It lowers your heart rate and gives your prefrontal cortex the bandwidth to actually make a deliberate strategic choice.
That is profound. It flips the switch from blindly reacting to the noise to actively making a choice. It's a brake pedal, not a participation trophy.
That's a perfect way to phrase it.
So we've identified the traps, we understand the science of the six pathways, and we know how the burnout cycle functions. But, you know, insight without application is useless.
Right.
How do you know where your ecosystem stands right this second? The source material provides this really brilliant diagnostic tool called the Thrive Balance Performance Check-In, or TBP. It's a daily 10-question diagnostic designed to measure your current allostatic load.
And the brilliance of these specific questions is that they are designed to bypass our brain's incredible capacity for self-deception.
Oh, we are so good at lying to ourselves.
We really are. We are remarkably skilled at telling ourselves, our colleagues, our families, that we are totally fine right up until the literal moment we collapse.
Yes, the denial is so strong. So let's visualize this as a real scenario for you listening right now. Think about your morning today. Did you wake up feeling like there was already an urgent, high-pressure crisis waiting for you?
Just starting the day in a deficit.
Exactly. Did you get genuinely restorative sleep last night, or did you toss and turn? Think about your brain right now. Are you mentally overstimulated, jumping between 5 different tabs and thoughts? Have you actually stepped away from your screen and taken an intentional break today?
Most people would probably say no to that one.
Right. Are you carrying unresolved emotional friction from a conversation yesterday? Check your jaw and your shoulders. Are you physically tense? Do you feel grounded and present in this moment, or are you just surviving until 5 p.m.?
And when you answer those questions honestly with a simple yes or no, you get a remarkably clear, objective picture of your current state.
Yeah.
The framework tallies those yes answers and categorizes your load into 3 human performance modes.
Let's walk through those zones. So if you answered yes to only 0 to 4 of those indicators, you are operating in the green zone, which the framework labels regulated.
Right, the green.
This is the ideal state. You are balanced, calm, clear-minded, and energized. Your nervous system is stable. Your primary focus when you're in the green zone is simply to maintain and optimize. You just keep your healthy habits consistent and use this bandwidth to do your best work.
But as the load increases and you answer Y, yes, S to 5, 6, or 7 questions, you shift into the yellow zone labeled reactive.
Reactive, okay.
This indicates elevated demand. You are likely feeling stressed, your attention is scattered, you're easily distracted, and your energy is waning.
Which is where a lot of us live.
Exactly. And the protocol changes here. Your focus in the yellow zone is to actively reset. You cannot just push through. You need to take intentional breaks, utilize your mindful productivity and restorative movement pathways, and rebalance your priorities to refill your cup before it empties.
And finally, if you answered yes to 8, 9, or 10 of those questions, you have breached the red zone, which is overloaded.
The danger zone.
Yeah, this is a severe stress load. You are overwhelmed, irritable, physically exhausted, and teetering on the edge of that disconnection phase we talked about. And the protocol here is an emergency stop.
Full stop.
You must pause everything, stabilize your physical body, drastically reduce your external demands, and seek support. You have to aggressively deploy sleep, nutrition, and digital boundaries immediately.
You have to treat it like a biological emergency.
So what does this all mean for us practically? I want to highlight one crucial sentence directly from the source material. Your mode will change. That's normal.
Such an important reminder.
It is, because I think highly ambitious people tend to take a diagnostic like this and feel that scoring a red is a moral failure, like they got an F in the subject of life.
Right.
But it isn't a report card. I like to think of it like an acoustic feedback loop. When a microphone gets too close to a speaker, you get that horrible, deafening screech.
Right. I hate that sound.
Right. But the system isn't broken and the microphone isn't evil. It's just physics. The noise is compounding, and the only solution is to physically step back and break the frequency. Being in the red zone just means you need to step back.
This raises an important question about our underlying assumptions regarding success and well-being.
How do you mean?
Well, we often operate under the dangerous delusion that a successful life is one where we have completely eliminated all risk, all friction, and all stress. We think the goal is to permanently reside in the green zone.
Which is impossible.
Fundamentally impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Life is dynamic. A sudden family emergency, a massive unexpected project at work, a financial shock. These variables guarantee that you will be thrown into the red zone eventually.
It's just a matter of when.
Exactly. The goal of the Thrive Balance framework is not to build an artificial bubble where you avoid the red zone forever. The true goal is to develop the awareness to manage that inevitable overload, utilizing those six pathways so that you don't stay in the red until the system permanently breaks.
You can't control the volume of the room, but you can learn how to step away from the speaker.
Exactly.
So let's recap the territory we've covered today. We started by dismantling the idea of balance as a vague concept, redefining it as a six-pathway ecosystem. Stress resilience, digital boundaries, mindful productivity, restorative movement, nutritional wellness, and sleep.
The foundational pillars.
Right. We looked at the hard biological science proving that these aren't just lifestyle tips, but measurable drivers of neuroplasticity and physiological performance. We dissected the four steps of the burnout cycle and recognized why losing awareness in the disconnection phase is so dangerous.
It's the most dangerous part.
Definitely. We explored how self-compassion acts as a literal neurological circuit breaker to shift us from the noise to the choice. And finally, we learned how to bypass our own denial and diagnose our daily load using the TBP check-in.
And as we bring this deep dive to a close, I'd like to offer one final perspective for you to consider.
Please do.
If we accept the reality that our performance modes are always going to naturally fluctuate between regulated, reactive, and overloaded based on the unpredictable demands of life, then perhaps the ultimate goal of human performance has nothing to do with artificially forcing yourself to stay perfectly calm.
Okay.
What if true mastery is simply shortening the amount of time it takes you to recognize that you've drifted into the red zone? What if success is just confidently knowing exactly which of the six pathways to deploy to map your way back home?
Shortening the return trip, that completely changes the paradigm.
It really does.
Because if we go all the way back to how we started this conversation, the scented bubble bath versus the engineering schematic, that is the fundamental difference. A bubble bath is performative. It's an attempt to pretend the stress doesn't exist while the house burns down around you.
Right.
But engineering your return, that is looking honestly at your internal ecosystem, reading the diagnostics without judgment, and knowing exactly how to recalibrate the machinery.
It is treating your mind and body with the precision, respect, and profound care they actually require to sustain a meaningful life.
The acoustic feedback is going to happen. The red zone is inevitable. The only question is, do you know exactly where your mixing board is? And do you know how to adjust the sliders? Something to think about the next time you feel the pressure start to rise.